Welcome to the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the snart to my snark, the diggle to my dark, is Dan. How are you doing this evening, Dan?
I'm doing rock solid. How are you doing?
Doing slightly better than I was last night when we were podcasting. The temperature is at least in the 70s here in the apartment.
Good.
Although now that there's alcohol involved, I think I'll be sweating for entirely different reasons than last night. Huh. So speaking of reasons that make me want to drink, we should introduce the rest of our little crew here. So you guys, feel free to speak up.
Hi, it's Cade.
Hi, it's Vicky.
Hi,
on your intro.
Hi, it's Jason, and life is better with alcohol. In moderation, of course.
So, let me get this straight. First, Cade doesn't say again, even though it's his thing. And then when we notice it, the guy that we accused of derailing the introductions, we actually derailed ourselves.
Nice. I got the reaction I wanted.
All right, the podcast is over. Good night, everybody.
Trolled you hard.
Hope you enjoyed the Flash and Arrow this week. All our valuable insights and fun.
Hey, before we get into Flash, can I say something about Monday's episode of Once Upon a Time in Gotham?
Sure. Knock yourself out, Dan.
I'm just kidding. What did you guys? What did you guys think of that scene where the 12-year-old Bane broke a 10-year-old Bruce Wayne's back and then threw him off a jungle gym? Did you think that was, like, trying to make some, like, anti-bullying message? Or what did you think was going on?
You know,
that would have been awesome if it actually happened.
I wish they would do that, because then that maybe – actually, I wish they would take it another step further, since they're ignoring anything that ever happened in any comic book ever. Like, why not just have Bane kill Bruce? Because then we get rid of one of the things that I hate about the show, and then have like Baby Hugo Strange, like throttle Barbara Keen, and then I'd love the show. Anyway, let's not go further down that crime alley if we can. So yeah, we are here to talk about hopefully both The Flash and Arrow. We're going to try not to have to separate it into two podcasts this week. So I feel like maybe to save time, we should just get right to it. Am I right, guys?
Sure.
Sounds good.
I like when I say to save time, then we have the lull. Okay, so the latest episode of The Flash was called, holy crap, you know what? I never wrote down the title. Is it Family of Rogues? It's Family of Rogues, right? That was the title. Family of Rogues, which is referring to the Snart family, I believe. So when we open the episode, we see Barry's working in the lab, which is nice because we don't really see Barry working in the lab all that often, now that I think about it. But he gets a call from Iris, who's being shot at the Goldwyn Tower somewhere in Central City. She's on some floor, looks like it's under construction, you know, which always seems to be a popular place for shootouts, you know, everything from The Dark Knight to Die Hard to everything. It's always an office under construction because that's just cheaper for the prop guys. So while he's on the phone with her, he's telling her, you know, is there a window? You know, find the window. And she's like, what do you want me to do? You know, he wants her to jump, you know, trust me. So she leaps out the window, and it's really kind of a fun way to start the episode. It's pure Superman and Lois now, I have to say. You know, he runs up the side of the building and saves her. And when you realize this is all about her chasing a story, yeah, she is now the official Lois Lane of this show. He also happens to ask, you know, what's the deal with the two guys, you know, up above? You know, they got guns. So in a flash, he goes and disarms them and apparently knocks them out. And that's our little teaser-like opening for the episode, which I'm going to say, I can't recall all the episodes right now, but it's rare that the teaser probably doesn't have much to do with the episode. So it was kind of nice that it was just like a little mini adventure. So.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought the whole thing was just great, so I hope they do more stuff like that.
It was just fun. So even if the episode wasn't as fun, having that little intro was fun, so it was a fun little exciting thing that kind of just gets you started. And it was good to see some fun in Flash where things had gotten kind of dark.
Yeah, it helped to maintain the levity that the series tries to have.
Yep, I agree.
It made me want to jump out of a window, too.
There's no one coming to get you, though, Dan.
And now, yeah. and now I think I love the episode, where I didn't know if I did before. No. So, we pick up back at Star Labs, and they're in the basement, and they're staring at the big, breachy, wormhole-y, whatever the heck we call this floating morphing thing. I like the comment, 52 breaches in Central City, and the biggest one is in their basement. I'm not sure, since they keep referring to it being the basement. My impression, or maybe it was just the fact that the sets were similar, that this was the same area that had been where the original trap was for the Reverse Flash. Was I just imagining that, or did it just look similar but not necessarily the same area?
I think it's the same area. It looks the same to me, too.
Same to me.
Okay. Either way, they're either recycling the same area or it is. It would kind of almost weirdly make sense if it was just in a kind of a simpatico kind of thing. Anyway, I was wondering. So Marty Stein. I keep calling him Marty for some reason. It must be the whole Back to the Future. It's probably the Back to the Future thing lately. So Marty Stein shows up. Oh, by the way, let me pause. How have they not taken a jokey shot on Instagram of, like, Victor Garber and Grant Gustin, you know, doing an impression of the Back to the Future thing like everybody else has? Maybe they have done it. I haven't looked, but it seems like a natural. Anyway, back to the episode. So he shows up. Apparently him having what I thought was a stroke. I mean, maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was just some sort of weird seizure. But nothing like that's going to keep him from something that's clearly, like, super mega nerdy here. Barry tries to run through the breach, and he bounces off it like it was, like, you know, kind of bounces off just the way he bounced off the Atom Smasher in the pilot. So maybe that'll be his thing this season. That'll be his Kate again. He keeps bouncing off things. So then Jay, who I was not that I'm Mr. Blackwell, or whatever the hell, right phrase is, or fashion police. But I was kind of happy to see that he lost that weirdly shaggy dog look that he had before.
Okay.
Jay Garrick, yes. Great haircut.
Love the haircut. It was a nice option. He looked less like a 20-year-old college student. That was a terrible haircut he had. It was nice to see him get that, a 40s cut.
Yeah, everything about him looked really kind of retro, but his hair just looked like, you just look like someone who, you've been there for 6 months and you haven't gotten your hair cut. Is that what the story is? But you've been shaving. Anyway, I mean, it struck me as odd, and I was glad to see he got a haircut. It's almost too bad he's not an older version of Jay Garrick, because then he could have the little things on his sideburns that only people in comic books ever get when they age, but almost never in real life. Anyway, back to the show. He's theorizing that this is this breach. It's kind of like you'd have a door on Earth 1 as well as a doorway on Earth 2, and there's this kind of a hallway in between them that's constantly shifting and twisting and whatnot. So they need to find some way to stabilize it before they can use it, and sort of use it like a speed cannon between the two worlds. And apparently his use of a phrase like speed cannon made Cisco very, very happy. He wants to hang out with him even more. Although probably Caitlin should have given him a look like, no, I'm the one who gets to hang out with this guy.
And Caitlin's thirsty.
Yes, I'm enjoying Caitlin's clear infatuation with him, because it kind of makes sense. So then we really switch gears from that to Joe and who we now know as Francine West, who is his ex-wife, I guess we can refer to her as. Apparently he's told his daughter and pretty much everyone else that she had died, when in fact she just, skipped town. But he wants her to stay out of Iris's life. He tries to bribe her. He kind of insinuates a threat of some kind that he wants her to leave Central City within the next 48 hours. I'm going to say right now, for the rest of the episode, like, this was a storyline that I was really worried about last time. I always thought it was just going to be a waste of my time and take up time in the episode. I'm going to admit now instead of saving it till later, they did a better job with this than I expected. And I think the credit has to go to Jesse L. Martin's performance, that he was really, really exceptional in this episode, particularly in the scene later on with his daughter. It just made me think, wow, I know this is like a light, silly show compared to something like, say, Law & Order, but I swear they give him more to do on this show than he ever did on Law & Order. At least more range of emotions he gets to play here. So I just wanted to get that out.
Yeah, they did. Agree. I mean, we've seen this type of scene play out before in other shows, and I felt like this time it was done a whole lot better. It could have been done by the book, but I don't know. It seemed more real and organic as to how it was portrayed by Jesse Martin. I loved it. I really did.
I'm going to spoil my own recap right now. I'll go as far as this. The scene much later on, the culmination of all this between him and his daughter, I'll tell you right now, I got teary during it. Now, maybe it was just my frenzied state of mind. I don't know, but the performance he pulls off, and Candace Patton's actually pretty good in the scene too, but I think she's also probably marveling at the job her co-star is doing. But that was a really good payoff, and I like the fact that it became clear he had to tell her. So we weren't going to play the let's keep secrets from Iris game this season as well, thank God. You know?
Right. And how many times have we seen this in other shows where that type of scene is played out, where the father's telling the daughter a secret and the daughter ends up hating the father? But
yes,
the way that Jesse Martin pulled the scene off, I went with it. I absolutely loved how Candace Patton reacted in forgiving him. I believe the forgiveness.
Yeah.
Jesse Martin.
I mean, I'll say right now, we ended up with a better father-daughter scene about something of this nature, with something being revealed, a secret, something that could really fracture a relationship on this show, than that other show that we're going to be talking about later on. Not in tonight's episode, but in general. The Wests handled things a little bit better than the Lances do. Let's just put it.
I was so glad they didn't make Iris be like all annoying and like super dramatic about it, like Laurel has been, like, you know, they've had her do like 30 times. So
me too. Yep.
I can hardly wait for that. She might be my Gotham this week. We'll see.
I just don't want them to backtrack on the character and make her annoying again. So
they're 3 for 3 as far as I'm concerned with Iris's character this season. So I'm very pleased with where they're going with her. Again, this is a show. I mean, I'm coming from like the geeky comic book side and being a Flash fan. Clearly, the thing that I would be least interested in would be Iris West stuff, probably. So the fact that they are making me like her and I'm interested in her on screen is telling me something. I mean, maybe these guys are never going to get the credit, like the writers of shows, you know, the upper tier shows that we watch as well. But they're doing a pretty good job, and as are the actors, you know. So I'm glad that we're here to give them the credit that they deserve. Back to the episode. So Barry runs into Patty, and I've already made it clear I'm only going to refer to her by her first name because I know I'm going to keep mispronouncing her last name. He runs into Patty at Jitters. I think this is where they established that Jitters now has a drink or a coffee drink that's called the Flash.
This is that scene. Yes, the Flash. Okay.
Yeah.
It's got like a shot of, it's like coffee with a shot of espresso in it or something, so it's not really the most, you know, original. Not really the most original drink. Like, really? That wasn't on the menu already? Because that's pretty common.
Yeah. It's like every drink at a coffee shop.
I think that shows that's a good way of showing the contrast between how Central City and Star City views their superheroes.
Well, I wasn't going to go there. But since you mentioned it, I have to tell you, I can't, because I can't let it go. I don't want to call out a group page because they'll probably get annoyed with me. There was a scene at the end of that one of those sizzle reels, I think, which was kind of goofed on this, where Barry Allen and Oliver Queen were looking at the thing and they see that there's a drink named after the Flash, and Barry cracks a joke and like, well, maybe if you saved your city or whatever it is, obviously a light joke. and most people would find it funny. I found it funny. I'm sure everyone here, was, if you saw it, you thought it was funny. But oh my God, there are people who not only did not find that funny, they went off on tirades. I read a couple blogs about it, all because of how, you know, they're tired of the people on The Flash, Barry Allen and everyone, like knocking Star City and the Arrow especially, and they just were going on and on. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, it was a joke. Oliver Queen smiling in the scene. What is wrong with you people? You have less of a sense of humor than that character. I kid you not. On a page, there was like a thread that was going on and on. I mean, it wasn't just about that. That was just one thing. But I was just like, really? This all stems from a gag at the end of a sizzle reel? Which, people are so weird.
Yeah, but this then it also kind of has to do with the different approaches of their, you know, between The Flash and Arrow. So.
Yeah, but they need to get over it.
No, I completely agree. They overreacted way too much.
And yeah, they're big dummies. That's all they are. They're really big dummies.
Okay. Well, now I can't post this on that page. Okay. Once again. Yeah. And plus, with Arrow, they are making the effort to. Well, I want to say they're making an effort to lighten things up. Although there are still really, really, really dark things still happening on that show. But they're definitely trying to get them more a little bit closer in line to each other. Okay, sidetracking the episode. Got to get back. What was I saying? Barry ran into Patty. It wasn't even all that important anyway. Although there was something like, do you want to come over and celebrate? And she didn't. And I was like, not really clear what it was they wanted to celebrate. So I don't know what they were talking about. Did anyone know what they were celebrating? They were celebrating something from killing a villain last week. I wasn't really clear what they were celebrating.
No idea.
Mutual attraction.
All right. Thankfully, it's not important, so who cares? But at the table, it was cute that Caitlin felt the need to keep checking on Professor Stein, and then we discovered that Cisco actually does a pretty good Professor Stein impression. So I got a kick out.
Awesome. Awesome impersonation.
That was spot on.
I bet there has to be like, there's going to be like a gag or blooper reel for this season where he probably does a lot more, and with probably Victor Garber, you know, in view somewhere. I want to see Victor Garber doing a Cisco impression. That would be awesome. That's what I want to see. Anyway, while this is happening, he actually ends up bumping into Lisa Snart, AKA, as he and only he calls her, a Golden Glider. And it turns out she needs help because her brother has been kidnapped. Now, back at the lab, well, this time Barry Allen being skeptical is a lot more understandable than his level of skepticism last week because of, you know, she's not really one to be trusted. So she tries to tell the story of how they were robbing a racetrack with her brother and Mick. I guess that means Captain Cold and Heatwave. And Snart was snatched. He was thrown in the back of a van and, you know, took off. So she doesn't know what happened to him. But Cisco is able to track him down via that cold gun he created because of course he's able to do that, whatever. And but Flash shows up there, and after a little brief chat with Leonard Snart, well, Captain Cold blasts him from emblem to toe. And at that point, that's when his dad shows up, and we realize he's being played by Michael Ironside. After that, you know, because he still has his little earpiece in, Cisco activates apparently there's some thermal hardware in that suit, which melts away the ice and frees Barry. And all we know right now is that, oh, Lisa Snart has got some splaining to do. So we knew that Michael Ironside had joined the cast, and I think the slightly older among us probably find that cooler than the younger kids will. I was excited. I was oddly excited to see Michael Ironside. Was anyone else happy to see him show up in the show?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when he got cast, that was like one of the better moments of like casting for these shows. It's like, that's awesome. Michael Ironside is going to be on here.
It was weird in a later scene. Not that he was necessarily speaking like him or necessarily looked like him. For some reason, I was thinking, wow, there's almost like a Jack Nicholson-like thing going on here. It was very brief. It was only one scene. But I kept thinking, oh, if they do a movie version, can they get Nicholson to come out on retirement and play like Lewis Snart? I just remember at a certain point in time in the 80s, it seemed like your go-to bad guy, or if not a bad guy, your go-to rogue, no pun intended for Flash, was always Michael Ironside. So I also was excited when they cast him. Dan, I remember that he was on the ongoing TV series, right?
Yeah. He was more prominent in the second V miniseries, V the Final Battle.
Thank you. I that's what I couldn't remember. I couldn't remember if he was on the miniseries or the ongoing series. So he did appear in the second miniseries. Okay, cool. It was him and that really big guy, right?
Yeah.
Real quick about that scene, it had one of my better, my more favorite moments in the show when Barry runs in and sees Snart. He goes Snart, and Captain Cold just goes Barry, as if they're best friends. It was such a simple, perfect explanation of his character that he's just going to call him Barry. He's like, "Hey, Barry," and it was like nothing.
Yeah, it seemed. Go on.
I said that seemed to be a theme throughout the whole episode, is that there was a understanding between the two of them. They were very familiar with each other by now.
Yeah, I think one of the highlights of the episodes is there's an ongoing thread of these little interactions between them, you know, up to the point where he says at one point, you know, we're going to go through this again. This is going to become old hat now, or whatever he says.
I saw him calling him Barry more of like a, you know, control, like power type thing, where, like, I mean, the whole rest of the episode, there's like 10 times where he like threatens to out Barry. So I think it's more of like a, "Hey, Barry, I know what your name is. Don't fucking forget it." You know?
Oh, there definitely was that. Yeah. It was
that. Oh, it's absolutely that. Oh,
but it's without, totally that.
They're okay. They're, we should be clear, as it is said at some point, at least once in the episode as well, they're not friends. know? Or at least Leonard Snart does not consider him a friend. You know, so we should never mistake that, you know, and I don't think they ever will be friends, quite frankly. They just have this weird kind of relationship based on the code and the deal that they've made and so on. So back to the episode. So this doesn't become an hour and a half recap like I was trying to avoid. Lisa can't believe her brother is working with her dad. And when they're all questioning her, she ends up revealing a scar from her childhood. So now we know that she was an abused child, and she leaves the room, and Sisko goes to track her down in this place, which is like his place to get away from everybody else. I thought we got a surprisingly emotional scene between Lisa and Sisko, where, you know, she does reveal how her dad had abused her and that it was her brother who had really raised her. So she really is desperate to find out what's going on and wants their help. So at this point, it does become a lot more clear. This isn't some sort of scam she's pulling. This is the real deal. Another surprising thing in the episode, I'll go off recap again, and was I was surprised by how much I kind of enjoyed all the Sisko Lisa Snart interactions. I found them much more believable, or more fun, more believable than I did last season, actually.
I did too. It started as a goof last year, but it's turned into something more during this episode as it played on.
Vicky, did you have anything else you wanted to say about it, or do you want me to?
No, I got some stuff later on, but no, we can keep going.
Okay. All right. So now we're back to Joe trying to visit Iris at the Picture News, and it looks like he's going to have a heart-to-heart with her, but Linda Park shows up, so it's nice to see that Linda Park is still on the show, because I wasn't clear on that, to let them know that Iris actually is going to have the story that's going to be on the cover of the next issue of Picture News, which is kind of big news. So at that point, Joe doesn't want to burst her bubble of good news, and like, you know, so he decides not to tell her. Although, in a way, I thought, you know what, that might be the best time to tell her, because if she's on a really super high, she won't fall down as much, but whatever. I'm not a dad. I don't know. So after that, Barry goes to see Snart, who's chowing down at some bar and grill. I can't remember if they did it on the show. Did they ever establish a specific hangout that Snart goes to on this show, or is that just more of a cartoon or comic book thing? I can't remember.
No, I think last season when he went to him for the deal to move the rogues out of the holding, there was a specific place he went to. They even like showed the name of it, but I can't remember what it's called now.
Right. Because I didn't see a sign outside this place, so I didn't think it was whatever that place was.
I just assumed it was the same place. I can't remember the name of it either, though.
Okay. Just curious, obviously, again, pretty low on the importance scale. What's important is their conversation, and I like that, you know, Snart does bring up, I remember our deal, you know, you leave me alone and I make sure no one dies. So I kind of like the idea I guess Captain Cold, and by proxy, I guess Heatwave and Golden Glider, pretty much are allowed to rob as much as they want. I mean, I guess the cops can still go after them, but they're hands off as far as the Flash is concerned. So I guess they have to resist the temptation to go on some sort of mad robbing spree where then the newspapers will all be like, where is the Flash? Why is he not stopping Captain Cold? It's an interesting dynamic that they've had to develop here. But the point of this conversation is Barry's concerned because even if he's made this deal with Leonard Snart, Lewis Snart, or Louis Snart, or Lou Snart, whatever you want to call him, doesn't have the same kind of code based on, you know, his past history. So he even says, you live by a code, but I don't think your father does. So at this point, threats are exchanged. And like you said, including revealing Barry's ID, which is said a few times throughout the episode. But Barry doesn't care because, you know, he'll stop him one way or the other, whatever the consequences. But I think my favorite thing about the scene was the fact that he decides to leave Barry with the check.
That was my favorite scene, too. Favorite part of the scene, too.
And I really liked how like they actually like show him getting the check and just looking kind of disgusted about it.
It's too bad it hadn't been like a big steak or something. So then we switch to Joe and Barry, and Joe tells Barry about Francine. And it's clear from their conversation that, you know, you have to tell her the truth. You've lied to her for so long. And as I mentioned earlier on, you know, yeah, we saw how well keeping secrets from Iris worked out last year. You shouldn't even need the advice. You should know, I got to tell her. Just tell her. So then we switch over to the Snarts. It's pretty fun. It sounds like a bad 80s cartoon. The Snarts and a third guy whose name is Rutenberg. For like a split second, I thought maybe he might be someone of note. And then, you know, about 90 seconds later, like, no, he's probably nobody. It's interesting in this moment that it's clear that Leonard is trying to keep, you know, he's trying to keep the plan so that his word, so that they somehow can avoid casualties. But it's also clear his dad thinks casualties, well, they're just unavoidable collateral damage, you know. I'm surprised he didn't say, you know, get a pair of balls, boy, or something like that. The thing I really liked in this scene, one of the moments I liked, is the touch where Lewis reaches out to put his hand on his shoulder and he avoids him touching him. So I kind of like the idea there's an implication that she wasn't the only one who might have been hit as a kid and such. So I like that little touch there. So he asked Rutenberg if he's worked out this keypad security system, but he hasn't. Then he switches back to his son. I like that he calls it a freeze gun, and Leonard corrects him, like, it's a cold gun. So that's a little that's a slightly more subtle bat reference than they did with the signal in the first episode of the season. But Rutenberg, for some almost inexplicable, why are you saying that reason? Kind of snipes at the only reason that Leonard Snart's even there is because of that cold gun. He just starts cracking. I'm like, dude, why are you doing that? So Daddy Snart gets annoyed and basically has this weird controller in his hand, which gives Rutenberg the splitting headache before, I guess, blowing his head off entirely. I think the scene ends with him saying something like nobody talks to my boy that way or my son that way or something like that. Only he can, like, beat up on his kids, I guess. I'm assuming no one had anything to say about that, so we'll just plow on ahead. We're at the where they left the body, I guess. Joe, Barry, Patty. It's all kind of cute. I was a little disappointed in the writers that they decided to have Jesse L. Martin say, oh, hell no, because I was like, oh, no, don't use that line. That's such a tired line. It's like every black cop in the history of movies and TV has said that at some point in the last 30 years. This entire scene is just about they found the body. They figure out that it's Rutenberg. It's them connecting the dots to get to Leonard and Lewis Snart, and they're trying to figure out why he would still be helping his dad. And then they realize, because of the traces of thermite, they realize that the guy had his head blown off, and somehow they're able to put it together that his sister may be in danger. Maybe dad did something to his sister, and that's why he's not working with him. That's one screwed up dad.
It's messed up.
Yeah. I think one of the clear things about this episode is that they've set up this parallel of father-daughter relationships. So, because we're switching between the Joe and Iris situation and this weird situation between Lewis Snart and his daughter. Very different.
Extremely different.
He's certainly never going to be nominated for Father of the Year.
No. He never will be again.
Have a heart. Anyway. So then we switch back to, we finally get back to Jay Garrick, and he's hanging out with Caitlin, and he's working on that breach. They say he's making progress. I will confess, in the moment, although it became clear later, I was like, wait, what is it he's doing? Is he trying to divine some way to stabilize the breach? And then I said, oh, it's going to be some sort of sci-fi mumbo-jumbo about building the speed cannon, I'm sure, whatever. The scene is really about these two characters talking about him missing his powers and about appreciating what you have at the time when you have it, and whether you can still be a hero despite not having superhuman abilities. We do, I think you might have mentioned this in one of our little private chats or made a reference to it. We do find out a fact that I think we were wondering about in our previous Flash-related podcast, that apparently there was a particle accelerator explosion on his world as well, which is what led to his powers. He didn't mention that.
Right. Right. That was the last Flash podcast we did that I brought that up, because it looked like it was working on Earth too, but evidently there was an explosion there too as well. I had the same thought as you did. It's like, oh, no, that answers that question.
It's also interesting that these are parallel worlds, but they obviously these accelerator accidents happened at different times, since he got his powers like 2 years ago. So,
right.
So there's that. Where was I? Anyway, back to Jay and Caitlin. It's kind of a sweet scene, but I gotta say, and it's gotta happen at some point. I know it'll probably happen much later in the season. Maybe it'll be before the big showdown. They gotta give him his powers back at some point. I mean, I would be annoyed at a certain point if the entire season we have Jay Garrick and he doesn't get to be the Flash, other than the brief little flashback we got in this first episode. They're gonna give him his powers back, right? They have to.
We're two episodes in, and I'm already annoyed with him not having powers.
No,
I'm in the same boat as you.
Okay.
I think to go backtrack one second, I think the reason that the particle accelerator went online earlier in the other world is because like the Wells in this world was injured, so he didn't really have the ability to build it quite as fast.
I don't know, because there was always supposed to be the accident was always supposed to happen on Earth 1, and in fact, if I recall, in season 1, didn't he take steps to kind of speed up that process?
I think it was like 15 years earlier than it would have if the actual Harrison Wells had done it. So Thawne Wells sped up the process of the accelerator going bad.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah, no, that's exactly he mentions that to Barry at some point, that this wasn't supposed to happen to you for like 15 more years, but I made that better. I fixed it.
Okay, that makes more sense. Well, then again, but just by the fact that they mentioned like that War of the Americas, obviously, just because they're parallel Earths doesn't mean there's parallel events necessarily. Things can take place at totally different times. So I just thought it was curious. Then again, if the particle accelerators on both Earths happened at the same time, that might have caused an even weirder wormhole thing to happen. So maybe it's best that that didn't happen, I guess. Oh, I think I just came up with the plot for season 3. Okay. Anyway. So Sisko and Caitlin, they end up determining that Lisa Snart's dad injected her with a thermite explosive. Oh, by the way, Vicky, did you say dad of the year before?
Yeah.
Oh,
I said he'd never be nominated for Father of the Year.
Oh, so I just, right here, I wrote the note, Dad of the Year. and speaking of Dad of the Year, which is a natural segue, the very next scene was that Joe and Ira scene that we talked about earlier. We've already kind of spoken about it, but once again, enormously effective. Joe does tell the truth. We hear the reasons why he did it. You know, your mom was a drug addict and the different things that she did and how irresponsible she was. And it's hard to argue with his decision, but he's broken up about it. I mean, the man is crying and she does forgive him. She does understand. It became a really nice scene between these two. It was one of those scenes that made me believe that they really were father and daughter. Which I don't think I've gotten as much of on the show as I've gotten the father-son relationship between him and Barry. So it was kind of nice to see these two have a scene like that together.
Yeah, it was a really fantastic scene.
Yeah, this was one of my favorite scenes of the episode. I know you guys talked about this earlier, but I'm super glad that they didn't go the cliched route and have her be all angry about it and then storm off. Because honestly, I feel like this would be the more realistic reaction. You know, he clearly explained to her what had happened, why he did what he did, and it really was in her best interest.
Right. I totally agree. I like that they didn't just do drama for drama's sake and then just drag it on, and where we would have just been like annoyed with it already. So good on them. Now, my personal highlight of the episode is next, and it's not even in the episode. It's in the commercial break because we got the ridiculous Guitar Hero showdown between I can't even say it. What is it? Candace Patton and is it David Ramsey? Is that the name of the actor who plays Diggle?
Yeah, I just call him Diggle.
Yeah. Let's see. It was. I didn't think anything could be way more lame than the Lenny Kravitz, James Franco commercials. Yeah.
I love that commercial.
I know. They pulled it off. It was just, it was a douche chill inducing spot that they did. I'm glad that that's over with. It didn't persist for the entire season.
Thanks, of course, I was spared that.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great. And when they have a crossover episode, I really hope they have like Iris making like an air guitar gesture, a Diggle or something that like nobody will get, because that would just be funny as hell.
It would be.
Anyway. Yeah. What was that? I saw like the Smack Talk ones that they had done like a week or two earlier. I'm just so glad I didn't have to see that because I wasn't able to watch it online. I had to watch it online.
You should be happy you were spared that.
Yeah.
So away from the bad, the stupid, whatever we call that, and we get back to the episode. And Flash and Caitlin are using a magnet to try to trace where that thermite is in Lisa Snart's neck so they can figure out a way to extract it. But Sisko stops them just in time because apparently that thing's exposed to, you know, air. It's going to go boom. It's going to explode. So at that point, the Flash hatches his plan to infiltrate the crew as like the new tech guy, which means we're going to get another scene between Barry and Lenny. I kept writing Barry and Lenny for some reason. I don't know why I did that. Well, unless I skipped over anything that anyone wanted to comment on, I might've missed like a jokey comment or something there. I was writing notes really fast at this point. I'm going to say no. Okay. No, The one thing I did right here is like Wentworth Miller is so damn good as Len Snart. I really love this character. I know it's maybe some people don't find him as interesting. Maybe I don't know why, but I think he's great. I think he adds something to the show, and he's one of the reasons I am looking forward to the Legends of Tomorrow series. To see him in that kind of a part really intrigues me.
He takes it just to the edge of camp without taking it too far.
Yes.
I get excited for Cold episodes, not because it's Captain Cold, but because it's him as Captain Cold. Yes. Like, I would like Cold, but him being Cold makes it even better because he has a take on it that is just fantastic.
Can I say right now, even though there is no earthly reason I can imagine why the two would interact because of such different types of motivations, but concerning the two shows that we're currently watching, I would love if there was a way that the Captain Cold could interact with Damian Dark.
That would be great.
Because the sense of humor that both characters have, they're both actually, and they both kill. I mean, despite his promise, apparently he kills people. So I just thought of that.
AB on Legends of Tomorrow.
That's right. I forgot that thing. Yes. That you spoiled last time around.
Yes, beyond Legends of Tomorrow.
Just kidding. No, I'm not. So Barry, or as he calls himself when he meets Daddy Snart, Sam, convinces him that he had helped Lenny steal the Kondak diamond last year. By the way, isn't Kondak the place that kind of stands in for Iran or Iraq in DC Comics for like the past 30 something years? They always use it. That's the region, Kondak.
Yes, that is the Middle East country. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I thought. I think like Black Adam had something to do that. Maybe he was in charge, or he started killing people. I don't know. All right, back.
That's
to
where Black Adam ruled.
All right. I don't want to get back to. Okay. So
comic derailment, right?
I know. So of course, I love the fact that that Lewis Snart agrees, but they're gonna go rob the place like right now. So, no time to show him a plan, no blueprints, no nothing. No, we're going right now. So they go to the building, they get past the security desk. Barry, it seems like every little moment here, Barry's trying to do something to prevent Lewis Snart from killing people without him seeming to be aware of it. Like Barry gets pushy with the security desk people about the backed up toilets right when he sees Lewis is about to reach for the gun. Then on the 27th floor, you know, there's those guards down the hallway, and Barry quickly goes, whisks him away because Lewis is reaching for the gun. Lewis is not really much of a criminal. If his first move, like instantly, like, oh, I should just shoot people. It's really, how is he not still in prison if that's his way of going about things? I don't get it. Then finally they get to that keypad, and without him noticing what he's doing, Barry does like with a super speed, like millions of little combinations to finally get through. But then Lewis shoots him. And I like that then the scene ends with Lenny looking back saying, you know, sorry, Barry. But when we come back, we see that Barry caught the bullet because, you know, he's the Flash. Yeah. Everything moves slowly for him. Which is, by the way, that's always something I kind of questioned about the Flash when they always have that thing about, well, everything around them seems to be moving really slow. It's like, but does he only just turn that on and off? Otherwise, how does he communicate with people if everything's like in slow-mo around him? But no, that's just one of those little wacky Flash things I've always wondered about.
I have a theory about that.
Okay.
It's just that it kicks in when anything that moves faster than him is in his area. That's what I think.
All right, I'll go with that. I don't know if I'd say faster than him, but maybe I'm at a certain speed, because technically nothing's faster than him.
At the time when he's in a resting state.
Okay. there are really bad jokes I feel that could be made here, but instead I'm going to stick to the episode. So Cisco has come up with a way to remove that thermite, I guess we'll call it a thermite bomb that's in Lisa Snart. But he's going to use this kind of a gun that will essentially siphon it out. Because that's what Cisco does best. He creates new wacky guns. But apparently there's some sort of a risk because it does use, you know, the one thing you can't expose the thermite to, compressed air. I think we kind of go back and forth here. I think we kind of cross-cut between the snarts breaking in to that safe. You know, first they go through the laser grid. I kind of like the gag where he uses his freeze gun to literally freeze the lasers and then just, you know, walk through them and break them one by one. I'm not sure that's quite how that would work, but, you know, I'm no Stein or Garrick or anybody, so maybe I'll go along with it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think that works.
Yeah. I don't know. Can you freeze a light beam? But then again, if there's microbes or molecules or dust mites or whatever in the, I don't know. Best not to think about it. He could have just frozen the lasers, you know, on either side of the wall. It would have the same effect, I think. But as he's breaking the safe, it's made clear. I think he's got like 2 minutes, or I think maybe he said like 125 seconds before the sirens go off, which they do, and the Flash shows up. Meanwhile, back at the lab, Cisco is decidedly nervous about, you know, putting that gun against her neck and hoping it works. But this is where we get the nice little moment between Lisa and Cisco. She trusts him. I think she even puts her hand on his arm to calm him down a little bit. But we have a little showdown between the Flash and the Snarts, and that's when it's kind of an awkward showdown, because immediately, like, Daddy Snart takes out the remote control to, you know, that he's going to kill his sister unless his son kills the Flash. And I wouldn't have thought he would think that would be a big deal. It was really strange. But they get the news that the bomb is out. I don't know why the dad believed that, why he wouldn't have just pressed the button anyway. But, or maybe he thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't blow off the head of my daughter. I don't know. He's like, again, dad of the year. But instead of killing the Flash, Snart kills his dad. And the Flash, who is, I don't know how surprised he is by it, but he does ask him why. So, of course, in pure near camp fashion, he has to say, he broke my sister's heart, so I broke his. Wah, wah.
Yeah, it was cold as ice, man.
Oh, God. Are we gonna lapse into like Schwarzenegger, Mr. Freeze jokes at this point?
I hope so.
So when we come back, we have Barry visiting Leonard in Iron Heights. It's funny that he mentions he's used to going places like that to see his dad, but now he's seeing this guy. This whole scene I like because it was clearly they're paving the way for Legends of Tomorrow about Barry's. Yeah. Seeing some good in him, and so I like that he says, but what's the pay in that? So they're definitely gonna try to make him like the borderline Han Solo like character, I think, on Legends of Tomorrow. Only, you know, a bit more ruthless. It's the 77 version, not the special edition version, I guess.
Would that make Heat Wave Chewbacca?
That would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it? So Joe and Barry. Watch, you know, now I'm thinking when we watch Legends of Tomorrow, I'm totally going to be thinking they're Hansel and Chewbacca. Let's see if they do that. Or Rocket Raccoon and Groot. So Joe and Barry are leaving the prison, and he's thanking her for his advice about Iris. And then there's not really much more there. We're back at Jitters. I think the thing I like least about this show is the whole place. I just don't like that there's a place called Jitters. I don't know why that bugs me, but it just seems very CW cutesy to me, and I kind of hate that. But speaking of cutesy, we get a little scene between Patty and Barry. I think she misinterprets something with him, where she's giving him her number, thinking that, you know, that's what was at play here. But it kind of sort of wasn't. Although, Barry, dude, you know, you ain't getting any with Iris right now. This is a pretty good match for you. Maybe you should consider it. But it was cute. You know, thankfully it wasn't a very long moment between them, so I didn't mind it. And then we switch to another coupling, Cisco and Lisa, and Lisa Snart, and I like that she's got a gold cycle, of course.
Gold helmet.
And a gold helmet, yeah, because she is the golden glider, according to Cisco, at least. But it's a nice little goodbye between them, and Cisco gets quite the kiss from her. Okay, apologies to at least one person here. But I would like to think he got a little bit more from her for, you know, saving her life and everything. I hope it didn't just amount to just a little kiss, but I know it's an 8 o'clock show and kids watch, but come on.
Come on. That was a pretty good kiss. That was no peck on the lips.
Yeah, but you know, come on. Come on, saved her life. Come on. Anyway, what's the guy?
She'll be back. She'll be all back. Right,
that's true. When he's vibe, because then she'll think, oh, anyway. All right.
What the fuck?
He's got the vibration going on, you know?
There you go. I was waiting for someone to figure that. So we're back at the lab, and with the big breach, and apparently the speed cannon is done. I guess Jay apparently knows how to create quark matter or dark matter or whatever the heck he says. I forgot. I was really writing fast at this point. Do you remember what he said he created? Does it really matter?
It was
quarks. Gobbledygook. It's quarks. It was quarks.
Oh, I was just say quark like something.
Barry even referenced, you can make quark, whatever. Yeah, it was quarks.
All right. Like I said, I can't remember, whatever. It doesn't matter what it was. But clearly, Caitlin doesn't want him to go just yet. Because he's, you know, the door is open. He's going to go back to Earth too. But I like that the fact that Caitlin clearly doesn't want him to leave. The look on everyone's face, everybody knows what's going on here.
The door's open for Caitlin, too, you know, if you know what I mean.
I'm going to stop myself from saying something really hard.
Everyone knows what's going on except Jay, because he doesn't seem to really have a fucking clue about this either.
Well, you know, there is a tradition of people on the show not having a fucking clue, you know, Iris, last season. But, so he does agree to stick around a little longer, you know, to help with the 51 other breaches and Zoom and God knows all the other Earth 2 people who are going to be showing up for the rest of the season. That was nice of him. I think he leaves to go have a shower and a shave, and Professor Stein comes in. Oh, no, he's actually already there. But then he has this little kind of like a blue firestorm-like moment where, you know, his head and hands kind of erupt in flame, but it's blue flame, not the usual orangey, yellowy kind for the normal firestorm. He collapses, and that's when we get that little flash title card, which is the – is this the end? It's not quite the end. Specifically, Kate or Jen, did you have a comment to make about what happened to Professor Stein here at all before I move on to the final moment?
The only thing I could think of was that it looked kind of like the Blackest Night Death Storm. It's the only thing I could think of.
Yeah.
With the blue flame as opposed to the orange flame.
I actually had the same thought, believe it or not.
That was the only thing I could think of, because it's the only time I've ever seen any type of Firestorm-esque character have blue flame as opposed to the usual yellow that they usually have.
Other than when the elemental version of him going off on a comic tangent again.
I was trying to keep it to one, not two.
Slow down. We don't have time for that, Jason. Don't rein it in.
Just to explain.
So hard.
I'd like to know. Let him speak. Let the man speak.
Well, I kind of want to explain one thing before we go to another thing, because otherwise things get lost and people can't follow things, because how you explain things. But we can resume that in a second. For the folks who are listening who don't read comic books, the Blackest Night thing was a few years ago, was a major event at DC Comics, which was basically about the dead rising at DC Comics, which has been going on for 30 years anyway. But now there were these, you know, crazed, you know, powerful zombie-like versions of them that were basically going on killing sprees. And in the comic books, the Ronnie Raymond Firestorm did indeed die. So there is a point where it's the Blackest Night version of him. Is that and he's got like the whole blue flame thing going. Is that a quick and easy summarization of that, guys?
Yeah. Quick and dirty, yes.
Okay. Now, go ahead and explain the second thing so Dan can be happy.
Well, at one point, it was determined that Firestorm was actually the fire elemental of Earth, and he went under a metamorphosis where it looked like he changed appearance and his head went from orange to a blue color, and he got a whole different look. And that lasted for a couple years until they killed the character off.
That's the way they
it wasn't a hit. Let's put it that way. That version of Firestorm was not a hit.
Yeah, I kind of regret it on insisting for the explanation now. So, oops.
Did it kind of rank up there with the Superman red and Superman blue kind of crap that they did way back when?
Well, let's not drag them into it. That was wonderful. I love that story. There's no need for that.
So back to the Flash. It's horrible. So we do, get another little brief tease at the end. And this was one that I think got tongues a-wagging. We're at Star Labs at night and we're seeing that breach speed cannon, whatever wormhole thing. And somebody walks through. And it's Harrison Wells.
Not just somebody.
And that was the end. So, yeah. I really enjoyed the episode. I like that they kind of changed things up a little bit. You know, I like, you know, the idea of the heist. I think this episode was about setting the stage as well as a lot of different forms of character development for a lot of different people on the show. So I can't understand anyone really not liking the episode. I'm not going to say it's like the best one ever, but I thought it was really solid. I thought it, you know, I thought it built on the previous one as well. So that's my take on it.
I love the Wells moment at the end. It made you think, like, which Harrison Wells is this? The glasses were off and he was walking. Is this Eobard Thawne?
I thought the episode was really good. I mean, the ending, you know, I mean, a lot of the ending stuff was kind of dumb. I mean, just like, you know, the stuff like the motivations for, you know, Leonard Snart or Lewis Snart, just, you know, what he was doing right at the end. I mean, if you really think about it, it doesn't make sense. And Cisco's air gun thing was kind of like, okay, whatever. But it didn't really matter just because the execution of the episode was just so good and fun. I mean, seeing Barry like pretending to be like a tech bad guy was just hilarious, and a lot of the other stuff was just a lot of fun. It was cool seeing Michael Ironside again, even though his kids definitely didn't get their looks from him. So if they cast in their if they cast their mother at some time, she's gonna have to be, you know, super attractive to make up for that. But yeah, I liked the episode. It was fun, and I just gotta point out that I did predict that the villain was gonna get killed for the third week in a row. So.
Oh, wow, that's
but
right.
But not by Barry.
But not by Barry. Nope.
We're still keeping that streak alive.
They're the other. They're going down.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, I thought this was a great episode. It was hilarious seeing Barry trying to pretend to be a bad guy. And then the stuff between Cisco and Lisa was pretty great. It's their relationship is very offbeat. You know, it's just odd. It's interesting to see them try and Cisco try to, you know, feel her out. She's like, is she serious? All these things she's saying. And then they had, you know, that moment together where she kind of told him about what she grew up with. Like, as fun as it is to have Cisco's like quips and impersonations and pop culture references, those like quiet understanding moments between him and Lisa, I think, were really great.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't really get, I was taking really fast notes on this. I don't recall us getting very many pop culture things from Cisco this week, maybe because of his scenes with her. So a little light on that.
Yeah, he didn't really have many this week.
Yeah, we didn't. I thought the same thing.
Well, I guess but he made up for it with his Professor Stein impression. So that
there you go.
We covered the humor level for Sisko with that one.
It really was a Sisko kind of episode for him.
Yeah. It's interesting, even with all the villain stuff and, you know, Captain Cold, I kind of think the highlights of the episode were the relationship-y things, you know, the Sisko and Lisa and Joe and his daughter and Iris. I think those will end up being the kind of the highlights for me. Or even the Barry-Lenny relationship. It was all these little duos throughout the episode that kind of interested me more than anything. And Caitlin and Jay, even.
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
I think it was more about the pairings than anything plot-wise this week. And that's probably why I was able to enjoy it. And those who didn't were too stupid to pick up on it. Oh, that's right. I said they were stupid. That's right.
Yeah, kind of thinking about it, there were just a lot of scenes that were, you know, just one-on-one. Like, but you know, just between two people.
Yeah, I know on this show they tend to have these big scenes where it's like everybody in the lab. And they did have a few moments like that, but you're right. They did kind of narrow it down to two offs quite often. You know, like Barry and Patty a couple of times and things like that. You tended to have just duos instead of trios or more quite for most of the episode.
I think it's a sign of faith in your actor and the writers knowing the characters more. There's a better chance that they're getting a chance to actually write them and let you see who they are, that they understand who they are, instead of where you didn't get much character development when you have the big scenes we're usually used to. So it was good to see that, hey, the writers are getting these characters because they can't hide them in a scene with like seven people. If they're just one-on-one, they have to be true to who you're seeing them be.
Good observation.
Well, I broke the podcast.
And I actually I actually commented and I forgot that I was on mute. So I'm an idiot. But if it makes you feel any better, I was saying, good point. So.
It does. I feel less like an idiot for breaking the podcast now that I realize I didn't.
Well, it's kind of funny that I'm just getting near the end of my gigantic drink for the evening because I think unless... Does anyone else want to comment on the episode before we move on to the other show we like to talk about?
No, I think we covered it.
I've talked enough.
Yeah, well, that goes without saying. No.
Words I didn't think we'd ever hear.
One thing.
What did you?
I don't know if you guys caught this, but apparently there was a nod to Superman the movie. In the episode where Barry like catches the bullet and pretends to, you know, fall down that he's hit by the bullet.
Well, I thought there was a few Superman things throughout the episode because her falling out of a building and him catching her was a pure, like I said, was a pure Superman Lois Lane kind of a thing, especially now that she's become like the intrepid reporter there. I did not think of that, but yeah, that's a great takeoff on Superman the movie, which, you know, I love, so nice to see that. Thank you for bringing that up, Vicky. I'm glad you did.
You're welcome.
No, you just added 2 minutes more to the podcast, which is actually 90 seconds of me, but I like that. So let's move on to Arrow so I can shut up. Dan, you, as always, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, what's the name of the episode? I didn't bother writing it down.
I think it's Restoration.
Restoration? Oh.
Yeah, like okay. They're restoring her, so Restoration. Or they really like that place, that store you go to, Restoration.
All right.
I'll let you do the humor, not me. Go on.
The episode begins, and I think this is the third week in a row, so just like Martin Stein having some kind of like, you know, fit at the end of each Flash episode, we're starting off this episode with the welder is fighting.
It's become a thing.
All right. Okay.
Hashtag the welder.
Okay, we got the welder fighting some ghosts in a lumberyard or something. It kind of looked like a lumberyard, but it really wasn't like set up right. I mean, I live in an area where like there's lumberyards like all over the place, so I'm not really sure if it was that or like they're maybe just like pieces of wood that they're using to like, I don't know what they're doing, but I guess it was supposed to be a lumber yard. But they're, you know, they have a battle. One of them gets the drop on him, and for some reason like doesn't shoot him. I didn't really know what was going on there. And then Arrow shows up on his motorcycle, and then, you know, one of the most Felicity hacking a piece of logging equipment, which is, I mean, it's a bit of a stretch, even for my sweetheart Felicity, even though she was trying even my patience this week. But yeah, so she hacks a piece of logging equipment in the middle of this battle, and then the welder tries to get information from the guy that they capture, and keeps the guy from killing himself, but he's too obsessed with his anti-hive quest, and the guy ends up escaping. Then over to Nanda Parbat, and seeing the exterior shot of that reminded me of the time that Jason told me that they filmed it in the Himalayas, or actually in the Hindu Kush Mountains, and like, and because of that, I want to climb a bunch of mountains now. So I was like, oh, sweet. I want to go climb that shit. But, and by the way, Jason was lying. They probably film in, like, Edmonton or something.
Vancouver.
Vancouver, Edmonton, Winnipeg. What's the difference? They're all the same.
It's Canada, right?
Yes.
There goes our Canadian viewers.
Yeah, it's fine. All right, so we got Malcolm and Nyssa fighting in Nanda Parbat. It's just more of like a, I guess, I don't know, training, sparring type thing, where they seem to be, they're talking like they're really aggressive and want to, like, you know, beat on each other worse than they are, but they don't really do it. Laurel and Thea show up, and Laura demands that that Sarah gets resurrected, and Malcolm takes the seriously tiny villager debasement podcast line on that, and just kind of like speaks like, okay, not a good idea, you know, you're not thinking straight, Laurel. So after that, we got Oliver Diggle and Felicity acting way out of character. She just felt off the whole episode, but in this scene, it really was just like, oh, okay, you know, what are you trying to do here, Felicity? They have a little tense meeting in their hangout, and for some reason, like until that point, I didn't really realize it's like, oh, like, you know, a big part of their team's out like doing their thing, so that explains why their like battle capabilities are limited here. Then we switch to a flashback, which is pretty much just Oliver having some interaction with the tiny villagers, and one of them ends up trying to escape or something, and he just kind of like knocks him over with a tackle, and then, you know, one of the other dudes come in there, and a big old America voice comes in to knocks the guy out. It really wasn't much of a scene, as flashbacks go. And then some Argus agent dude shows up at Diggle's house and has information about a Mina Fayed. I'm not sure if this is a character that was in previous seasons. Anybody want to let me on that?
Nope, she's new.
Okay, so the way he reacted to it was just kind of like it's, oh, this is some, you know, something you got to go deal with right away. And it's like, okay, maybe this is some kind of plot thread that I was blissfully skipped, but that is not true. And then they show her visiting Damon Dark in his while he's, you know, done doing his dark offering to his demon lord or whatever he's doing. Then she introduces him to the villain of the week, at this point in the episode, we don't know his name, but I'm just going to call him by his amazing name, Double Down. Was he in Flash before this? Because I can't keep track of. Okay. Because I mean, Cisco having named him, I didn't think I'd seen him before, but I wasn't positive. So, but he shows up, and, you know, he uses his kind of cool card. Oh, it's got like a cross between Bullseye and like some weird tattoo thing, but he kills some ineffective mercenary with his cards, and then offers to take out Arrow and all of his Arrow's team for a price. Dark agrees with that. Anyone got anything about that? Anybody want to talk about that amazing logging equipment hacking? Because that was rock solid.
The only thing I found is that the ice shield on Diggle is retractable.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I noticed that.
I didn't notice that before either.
And when he runs with his head down, he looks like Juggernaut, at least in the dark.
Something I'd forgotten about that the Nanda Parbat scene reminded me is that Nyssa's still technically married to Oliver.
Wow. Another reason to hate on Oliver there, Dan.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. That Oliver straying from his marriage, the serial adulterer Oliver.
Why would he want to bother with Felicity when he's got Nisa there?
Because he is, I don't know, I guess I can't give him a compliment, but.
Yeah, you can't.
Oh, aha. Catch 22 there, Dan.
Boxed in.
I just tipped my king over, so. All right, guys. Good night.
He's podcast's done. Over. Gotham wins.
All right. Well, I guess it's my turn. We come back. We're focusing on Neda Parbat, and we have Nissa and Laurel talking about the price paid for the league and the danger of bringing Sarah back. Nissa tries to talk some sense into Laurel, but it's Laurel. There's no point in that about bringing back dead people. Now, we move on to Oliver and Felicity, where they chat about an extracted tooth when a call for a robbery comes in. The extracted tooth comes from the previous scene where Diggle had pulled it out of the mouth of one of the hive people or the ghosts, whatever the fuck they are. Anyway, going back, we see that Dig is actually spying on Nina Fayed and is ignoring Felicity's calls. Then we get a small flashback to the island where you see the small villagers being plotted on, were plotting against their captors, and that's the end of that scene. It was really quick. Then we go back to Oliver and the robbery, and he finds two dead people on the ground, and he's confronted by Double Down, where he's throwing some cards. You know, it's kind of mad. Who expects, you know, skin being peeled off and cards being thrown at him? It's whatever. Anyway, as we see, Diggle is discovered while being spied upon on Fayed. Since he's not wearing his helmet, he can react in time, and he takes out the dude. Unfortunately, the commotion is enough to rouse the attention of Fayed's bodyguards, and a big gunfight breaks out. Oliver happens to catch up to DD, which is Double Down, and a big fight breaks out while they're in the courtyard there. While they're in the garage, he managed to keep Oliver off balance. They have a nice fight, and they managed to retreat. Anyway, Diggle, this is a big commotion. He has to retreat too, and that's the whole scene. And we go to commercial.
Oh, perfect time. I was about to interrupt you, so I'm glad that was the end of the scene. So. During that first, that's like the first battle between, I guess, Olive and Double Down, right? That whole scene?
Right. Yeah.
Was it clear that he's, I mean, I was trying to remember it, you know, I was kind of whizzing through the damn episode, that everything he's doing, he's basically peeling off his tattoos and throwing them at him?
I mean, yes. There's a close-up right when Oliver shoots at him. You see there's a close-up of him reaching towards his forearm, and you see him actually like dig into the skin and peel up the card off of his arm.
It's cool. Gross.
It was a great special effect too.
Yeah, it looked really good. Like I watched it twice. Like I don't know how they made it look so good because I was trying to find out how they filmed. But there's a really good close-up of him doing it.
I gotta track that down. I must have been looking the other direction or something or. Writing something. Maybe, no, I wouldn't have been writing. I don't know why I missed that. I'm an idiot. So glad to hear it, they did that because I was worried about that. So cool. Okay. Sorry. A bad viewer.
Anything else about that scene anyone wants to talk about?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, then we can get to what I like to call the dysfunctional portion of the show where you see how broken some of these people are.
Oh, I thought you meant that the part where you talk is the dysfunctional. Come on, dude, you set me up. It was too easy.
I'd be aghast if I wasn't laughing at it. So I'd be bothered if it wasn't funny.
That's Kate again. Anyway.
All right,
I'm sorry.
All right, so
we theme song with that.
Oh no, we're not getting theme song segments. We don't have time for that. Back to Neda Parbat. We have Malcolm and Thea, and. Thea's trying to talk to her dad to get some help about what to do, and his solution is kill somebody. He's like, the only way to feed this thing, because you are kind of taking the souls of the dead, is to feed it with more dead to keep them at bay. She immediately does not like this idea. She's like, this is not how you're supposed to be a father. Why are you giving me such terrible advice? He hears her out and goes, okay. He tells her there's an old mystic who lives up in the mountains. And the next day in the morning, we'll go ahead and go. This seems to make her happy that he's going to try to help her. But seriously, this is one of those moments where you like realize how Malcolm is, that his solution is, yeah, just kill somebody. Pick one. It'll keep him at bay for a week. This will be how you deal with it. You also, in this scene, realize the only way for her to truly stop that would be to kill the person who injured her, which at this point is impossible. Because Ra's al Ghul is very, very dead. At this point, we cut away from them to Oliver and Diggle, come back to the Arrow Cave. They're having at it with each other, and Felicity turns into like a mother, basically telling her two sons, quit fighting with each other. I'm going to stick you in this room. You're going to talk it out. You're going to be friends again, with a threat of Mirakuru soldiers if they don't start behaving themselves. So this was a good moment for Felicity, seeing her be very strong and commanding, like, this is not going to work if you two keep it up like this. You're going to talk. You're going to find a way to work it out. And she leaves. This is the scene where we discover who Double Down is. We get a name for him. We also discover that the reason he has the powers he has is he was getting a tattoo at the time of the accelerator explosion. So since that's why his tattoos have abilities as opposed to just being stuff on his arm.
Can I just say that I hope there's so many more reveals of metahumans that were doing totally bizarre activities and somehow they got a power relating to that, you know, whatever it may be. A dog walker, or someone had a pee really badly or something. Just so they all have weird powers connected to it.
Scoops, the ice cream villain.
Call him Mr. Freeze.
Yeah. That was a moment of like, I can't believe that's what the story is, that he was getting tattooed. But here's the thing. Was he getting all of them? Or did it just magically give all of his tattoos powers?
I was confused because I know that there's, you know, DC comic fans will remember there's also a villain named the Tattooed Man who had tattoos that could come to life. So, I mean, this isn't quite the same. It's similar, but not the same, because it's just playing cards that are like little stiletto things. But yeah, I don't know how he has the actual powers anyway. There's no way you're going to be able to explain an ability like that that's not going to be somewhat stupid. So it's one of those, you will just go with it, you know.
Well, I was hoping with Dark having mystical stuff, we might get a mystical explanation for the character's powers instead of them just going to meta person. We have an accelerator explosion we can make all kinds of people from. But I guess that's what they'll do. So we'll just have to accept that's how it's going to be.
Hey, if you can suffer through 10 years of Smallville, of everyone coming into contact with kryptonite and getting powers, I think we can deal with the particle accelerator. So.
Well, I didn't watch Smallville, so I don't have to deal with that. Yeah. Okay. Now that we've covered terrible villains and how they get their terrible powers, we finally get Oliver and Diggle having the confrontation with each other. And while I admit they have points, I have to agree with Oliver in the fact that when Diggle goes, I just don't have trust in you, Oliver's like, but you are not giving me the chance to earn that trust back. And Oliver has a very solid point there, because Diggle, every chance Oliver has tried to make towards him, was just ignoring him. But Oliver really was attempting to try to build that back up. So that was, clearly Oliver was in the right on this one. I can't say I agree with Diggle in that he wasn't doing the right thing. He should have given Oliver a chance to try to at least make things better for the two of them.
Agreed.
At the end of that scene, we get a flashback to the island where they're trying to figure out who stole some product. And Oliver, the interrogator, shows back up from using some of his techniques in pain. And we cut back. So this is the part where I'm like, we're doing this again. Felicity is going to bring the card to Holt to get him to analyze it. And I'm like, why is she getting someone else involved in this? It just seems like we're already have many people involved. Let's get another one. So she asks him what kind of things he's been working on. He shows himself, and then she shows him a specific little orb, which at this point, having a T on it is really kind of nonsensical. For the comic related, any comic fan who saw it immediately recognized they were Mr. Terrific's T-spheres, which are little orbs with T's on them. And he, as he mentioned, he hasn't really what they were. They were all autonomous little robots, and they're exactly what the comics T-spheres are, except they have a problem of exploding right now. But it was a nice little moment of for comic people to see, oh, that's T-spheres. Why they have T's doesn't make any sense at this point.
I'm gonna go in a totally different direction on that. If Mr. Terrific's like the smartest, one of like the second, the third, or fourth smartest guy in the world, why does he even have to have T's on his spheres anyway? is Mr. Terrific about branding? It's ridiculous.
To be fair, though, in the comic, he kind of is. He has it on his face. He has it written on his jacket.
Why would you need it on?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
It could have been part of the metalwork and what, however, from an opening that's shaped like a T. It's not like a T was painted on it. So.
Hey, Reed Richards is the smartest person in the Marvel Universe, and he has fours all over, like, fucking everything he makes. So.
Exactly.
That's a strong point. Beyond, okay, but anyway, she gets him to, and you can tell he's not buying her story about where the card came from, because Felicity is not good at lying, obviously. She's never has been. He sees through it.
She's worse than Oliver was in season one.
Yeah, he's playing along, though. He's doing what his boss is asking him. He's going ahead, and he's going to check out what the card is. And so the scene goes away, and there's a little bit where he references the playing hand that she mentions doesn't exist. He goes, she's like, I guess that's why I lost. So that's the end of that scene. Well, Oliver and Diggle, after the discussion, they go back to Diggle's apartment, and Diggle at this point is going to let Oliver in on the fact that he discovered that Faeed was the one who hired Lawton to kill his brother. And so his investigation, he's been hiding for 2 years. He finally lets Oliver in to kind of get Oliver in to get some help on this, because this is his only chance really to do anything about it. Next thing we get to see Damian Dark being himself, wonderfully destroying people with words. He's Double Down and Faeed are both there, so he tells him, I want you to show me what you can do again. And Double Down's like, should I actually kill her? And he's like, no, try to kill me. So he throws the card at him, and Dark blocks it again. And he just starts talking, and he's doing his usual thing, and then he spins and flicks it and kills Saeed right there. She's dead. And turns back to Double Down and basically is like, you have one more chance, and cuts him on the face with his card. He's like, these are parlor tricks compared to what I can do. So it's cool to see that these things that we're seeing as really power are nothing compared to what he actually can do. Which gives us a moment, is like, what are we actually going to see from him later on? It's a great build-up for him to realize the powers we've seen so far are just small things that he can do. We cut back to Nanda Parbat. Thea's in bed. She's attacked by members of the League, which she then kills. And at that point, you suddenly realize Malcolm's basically just sent them in there to be killed to help his daughter in the only way he knows how. He walks in. She goes, you basically just sacrificed those two. And he goes, I had to do what I had to do because I do love you. And she realizes there never was an old man. And cut to break.
Oh wow, you had a big segment there.
There was a lot that went on. Some of it was a lot of building. There was a lot of like conversation, like similar to The Flash. There was a lot of like small things between several people. But in the same time, it was good because you got a contrast. You had see Thea and Malcolm and just how terrible that is and how they are just not, there's nothing good between the two of them. But you see Oliver and Diggle kind of working their way back to being who they were. That, as Diggle said, I would have taken a bullet for you. So it was good that scene, it gave us those moments where we can build on that. And then you get small things, like you get to see Holt being him science and discussing things. And you get to see Dark kind of showing off what he can do and putting that fear into everyone who deals with him.
I was so glad.
Go ahead.
I was just gonna say I was so glad that Felicity reamed them out. It was really nice to see her just be assertive like that. But then when she's playing around with the stuff in the lab, she should know that you don't just play around with things in the lab because they could blow up in your face.
This is true. I thought her scene of putting Oliver and Diggle in their place was definitely a highlight for her character, and I enjoyed her doing that. I thought that was really good. I liked it. Should we move on if there's nothing else?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Sounds like we'll move on. Okay. So we come back, and basically Felicity's trying to track down Nina. She can't find her per se, but tracks her phone to a specific location. We then go to a flashback where Oliver is torturing a villager to find out where the drugs are. Finally, a woman comes forward saying that she used the drugs for the other prisoners who are in pain because the guards work them too hard. The one guard is gonna kill her, but Oliver convinces him to let him take her out into the forest and kill her. We then go to Nanda Parbat, where Thea storms into Laurel's room, saying that they're gonna leave and that Malcolm's never gonna help them. Malcolm came in after her, you know, trying to convince her. You know, they're still arguing. And Thea tells Malcolm that she's the reason that he is the reason that she's like this in the first place. And she's not going to kill people, and just tells him to stay away. Malcolm admits that he's responsible for Sarah's death, so that he'll do what he can to make it right, and that they'll do the ceremony and put her in the pit. Oliver and Diggle then go to the location of Nina's phone, but then find that she's dead in a chair with a card in her mouth. Diggle apologizes to Oliver, saying that if he had trusted Oliver earlier, that then they might have been able to get the answers that he needed. Felicity comes to Curtis in the lab, and he says that the card that she gave him isn't a playing card at all, that it's got all kinds of things like a neural net, receptors, and proteins. The ink is a magnetite ink, which is used in tattoos and can be tracked. As soon as Felicity says that they need to get out of there, Double Down shows up, saying that the first one to tell him where the green arrow is gets to live. They run out of the lab and into the elevator. Curtis obviously has a lot of questions. What the heck is going on? So she basically gives him a quick explanation of saying how she works for the Green Arrow. She takes them down to a hidden floor where apparently the arrow cave is. She grabs a machine gun, badly shooting at Double Down while he's attacking them. I had to laugh so hard because she's shooting at him with her eyes closed.
I liked knocking over like some kind of like shelving unit that was like between them and Double Down. It's like, okay, you just like, you know, cleared his field of fire. Good job, guy.
Yeah, she finally gets a lucky shot in, hitting him in the arm, and he runs off. Then she goes to look and see that Curtis is knocked down and was knocked out by the light that Double Down had cut down from the ceiling. Thoughts?
That was a good job by you, Vicky.
Thank you.
Yes, you did. You did a good job. As effective as Felicity defended the arrow cave against the bad guy. Yes.
You're our Felicity. Yeah, I mean, I enjoy them finding yet another way to involve another person, and she only gave away, you know, some secrets, but you know, only her own, I guess. But I don't really care because I look at the big picture, and the big picture was we knew this was going to be the case from the get-go, so it's really hard for me to complain about it when I was like, oh, Mr. Terrific's going to join the cast. He's going to be like Felicity's helper. So it really didn't bother me.
I didn't know that.
Well, those of us who read things knew about it.
Yes. Shame on me for waiting for it.
Asshole.
Do you think there's a chance that they're like setting him up to be like Felicity's replacement in case she like gets killed, or like they like fake her death or something, whatever's going on in the future, 6 months down the line? Do you think they'd have him be like their new tech person?
There is that possibility. I hadn't thought of that.
Wow, kind of a bummer note to bring up.
Hey, I'm not happy to bring it up, so but.
Well, yeah, it certainly wouldn't make Dan happy.
I think now every episode, now we should spend a few minutes talking about the likelihood of Felicity dying now. It'd be a special segment. Likelihood of Felicity being in the grave. Segments or something.
Yeah, she's totally going to die.
Oh, gosh.
Bye-bye, Felicity. No, she's not going to. Or maybe. Anyway, I enjoyed that whole sequence. I got a kick out of it. You know, firing a gun like that isn't, especially if you've never done it before. I'm surprised she didn't cause a lot more damage, quite frankly.
So, I know.
I'm surprised the two of them don't have a couple bullets in them.
I had the same thought. She was lucky that she didn't, you know, shoot Curtis.
Oh no. Be wall-to-wall coverage on CNN later. Anyway, did anyone else want to comment on Act 4 before I get into Act 5?
I got nothing.
Nope, you're up.
All right, so we're calling it the Arrow Cave. Okay, the Arrow Cave, or, you know, Arrow Basement, or Arrow, you know, unknown floor. Diggle and Oliver arrive, and you know, Ollie, he's a little surprised that she was able to fend off Double Down. But, you know, I like that she mentions it was both her and a coworker. Although, clearly, he really, other than clearing a path for his cards, as Dan pointed out, he wasn't really any help at all. In fact, she probably would have done better if he hadn't been around, quite frankly. But he's at Starling General, because they're not going to rename every building in the city, you know, with the star instead of Starling, I guess. But she also mentioned that, you know, he only knows her secret, not his. Don't worry. So I think we should start counting how many episodes before he does know his secret, because I can't imagine it's going to last all season, because no one can keep their secret here. But more importantly, based on the properties of that card, they actually have a way to track down Double Down. Track down, Double Down, track down, Double Down. Yeah. So we switch over to Nanda Parbat, and we see that Sarah's corpse is poised to being lowered into the pit. Now, at this point, I think Nisa barges in, because, you know, clearly she's horrified that they're actually going to help launch yet another spinoff series from Arrow for the CW. Because she's like, you know, what's the Flash enough? That gets better press than we do now. What the hell? But, you know, Thea, or as I now like to call her, Wafy Dexter, since she has to satisfy her killer bloodlust every few weeks or something.
Her dark passenger.
Yeah. She asked Laurel if she's really sure she wants to do this. You know, Laurel's like, you know, she's pretty much as sure as the writers have been of making her the lamest character on the show for 4 years running. I need to pause for like 30 seconds. I wouldn't say I've ever defended Laurel, but I've always thought the hatred towards her character was a little bit extreme at times. You know, I clearly the writers have kind of been at a loss with her more often than not throughout the show. And maybe because she didn't quite click with the Oliver Queen character back in the first season, maybe it's due to that, maybe it's due to the actress, maybe it's due to the writers, I don't know. This episode made me really kind of want to suit up for the I Hate Laurel team, because every scene with her, I thought, you are a selfish little... Can I use a bad word here? Do you mind? Vicky, cover your ears. You're a selfish little twat. I was just so fucking tired of her. You know,
I thought you were going to go with bitch.
No, bitch is overused. Bitch can be used on TV. Bitch is not. Bitch is like kiddie show cursing now. I am now hoping that they figure out a way to make her be the one in the grave. She's not my black canary. She ain't no black canary. Kill her. Until she finds a way to redeem herself, I'm gonna be like Diggle and Ollie, not forgiving this annoying character. I'm tired of her. I hate her. I'm sick of her. I've been drinking. Maybe that's what's fueling this. I don't know. Back to the episode.
I have to agree with you. I got so annoyed with her just single-mindedly, we're going to do this, telling Malcolm, you know, you're going to do this for me. And honestly, if Thea, in her current frame of mind, is questioning if you should be doing something, probably shouldn't be doing it.
If the person who's supposed to be kind of crazy is questioning it, why aren't you? You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like when you're watching, I won't give political affiliations, but when you watch someone on a certain news channel and they're confronted with the facts and they just deliberately seem to ignore them and still stick to something which you know is total bullshit, that's Laurel Lance right now. She's not listening to anyone. Nisa's telling her, you're being selfish. This isn't about anything but your own guilt. And also, bad things are going to happen. Even the bad guy's telling you bad things are going to happen. You're still going to do it. Oh, I hate her. Anyway, so back to the episode. So Sarah goes into the pit. And for a moment there, it's like nothing happens. I really wanted someone to say, like, wait for it. Wait for it. Because then, you know, things start bubbling, you know, like soup's on. No, it's Sarah. She pops up and leaps out of the pit. You know, she's looking a little wild, but she's not quite as rabid as I wanted her to look. I really wanted her to look like a leering, you know, lunatic. And, you know, Thea still looks crazier than she does, quite frankly. But
she looked better than she went in, you know.
I should hope so.
I was very pleased that she was able to fill out her outfit again. But Malcolm injects her with something or other. Hopefully it wasn't, you know, Mirakuru or something. While this is all happening, dopey Laurel is trying to chat her up. Like what? Oh, I hate you, Laurel. So, meanwhile, back in Star City, Green Arrow and the Welder are there to stop Double Down from leaving town. Double Down, leaving town. I like the rhyme systems. So they have this little standoff where, you know, Green Arrow wants to know about his employer. You don't already know about his employer. You know who's employed, idiots. But turns out he's a lot more scared of that guy than he is of these two bondage boys. I was thinking that they're both in a lot of leather, they're kind of bondage. So Ollie ends up jumping in front of a card meant to kill Dig. Dig ends up going all Thea on the guy's face. And apparently Ollie taking a bullet for him, or as he says, a metahuman tattoo playing card. Apparently that has now restored the bond that dates back oh so long ago to a rich guy and his chauffeur. And that was the end of my act.
Yeah, that was a bit of a quick turnaround on Diggle's part to suddenly be like, oh, Oliver, I love you again. It's like, well, you certainly took that really easily. You just let him have, I mean, seriously, did you think he was dead?
Well, I think he's not, you know, 100% big forgiven, but it was the biggest step towards, you know, trusting Oliver again.
Yeah, he was also earlier in the episode saying that he should have trusted him before. So he's already, I think Felicity's dressing him down kind of punctured through a lot of it. Although apparently his own wife telling him that in a previous episode didn't do any good.
Exactly.
It's the power it definitely, of Felicity.
Yeah, it definitely felt like they were buddies at the end of this episode.
Yeah, which is a shame because I really want them to be annoyingly opposed to each other for the entire season because that would make for such great viewing.
Nope, sorry. You're just gonna have to settle for me being annoyingly opposed to Oliver for the whole season.
Yeah, there you go.
Anything else for that act?
Yeah, finish it off.
All right, let's wrap her up. Then we got Oliver, the welder, and Felicity have drinks or dinner or something together. And Felicity says a double down's been locked up by Cisco and Iron Heights. Did that make sense to you, any of you guys? I mean, like, why the hell would Cisco have anything to do with his incarceration?
Not really. It's like storytelling shorthand.
Yeah.
Because Cisco is working for the Central City, at that point, he's still working to some capacity with the Central City Police. With the anti-metahuman force. So he's been designing the tech for them. So he's probably been designing the stuff for Iron Heights, which is their prison. And he was going to be being shipped back to Central City. So
I was going to say Iron Heights has the metahuman wing.
Right, yeah. I just didn't think that they'd need Cisco for that. But
Well, I don't know if there's anyone else around who knows how to deal with metahumans quite just yet, because it's kind of a new thing. I'm sure, you know, over time, maybe there will be other scientists, but really, there's only, I think, 2.5 scientists in Central City. So, oh, Caitlin. Oh, well, you know, yeah. 2¾.
That's a half.
All right, and then they talk briefly about maybe getting a new version of the Arrow Cave. We've got another flashback with Oliver and one of the tiny villagers moving through the jungle, and then a landmine blew up. What exactly happened in this scene? I just for some reason I just didn't give a shit about it. So why did a landmine blow up there?
Because Oliver, he had to get rid of that person so he could let the prisoner go.
Oliver knows the layout of that area. He knows where the landmine would be, and he knows that they were being pursued. So he led them in that direction so that it would end up blowing up the other guy, so that the way there wouldn't be anyone around for her to do whatever it is he's doing with this woman.
All right, makes sense. Then we got Curtis and Felicity having a nice little chat about stuff, and then and, you know, just kind of bringing him up to speed a little bit on some things. And then I'm just going to assume that it was Ray Palmer hacking her phone. Anybody have any comments about that? Or not so much hacking, but like, you know, microscopic Ray Palmer something her phone.
It's absolutely Ray Palmer.
Yep.
I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm really looking forward to seeing Ray Palmer again.
I miss Ray Palmer.
As long as he's mini Ray Palmer, I want to see him again.
I just almost made a terrible joke. I don't want to say it now.
Okay.
That's okay. I'm pretty sure that I'll end up using it at some point. Because remember, I mean, you know, he's already banged my sweetheart. So once he's back to human size, I'm sure I'll have some negative things to say about him as well. And they're accurate. Oh,
it wasn't negative. It was a positive comment, but it would have just been a terrible pun.
I'm gonna be wondering all night what the pun was.
Don't worry, I'll tell you after the show.
Another sleepless night, thanks to Kate again. Yeah, come on.
Okay, then just there's a scene that's basically Sarah being chained up, looking all wild and stuff, and everybody pretty much just, you know, stares at her and kind of wrings her hands. And that's basically all that happened right there. And then we have Nyssa poisoning the Lazarus Pit, blaming Laurel for her reckless resurrection of Sarah in this episode. And then the episode ends with them all gloomily staring at the smoky pink Lazarus Pit. That's all.
That certainly answers the question of the Lazarus Pit, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yep.
Yeah, I got a little. Again, I was annoyed with Laurel trying to talk to Sarah. I was like, idiot. It just played dumb. It just looked dumb. Or maybe I just hate the character so much at this point. I'm just gonna, everything she does is gonna register as dumb. I definitely enjoyed the episode a lot. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was terrific. No pun intended.
I didn't like it quite as much as the first two, and this villain wasn't quite as, their villain of the week wasn't quite as impressive as the the earlier two, especially because all it took was Felicity tagging him with a bullet, and he just like, okay, world's laziest hitman, I'm just gonna freaking leave, I give up. But other than that, it was good, enjoyable. Definitely. Neither series has had any stinkers yet, so hopefully they can keep that streak going for a while.
Hey, Vicky, I was confused by something, and I have a feeling you might be the one who can clear this up for me. I saw the ad for the next episode. Mm-hmm. I thought a certain person was showing up in the next episode, but I don't get the impression from that trailer that's the one. Is it the fifth episode he's going to show up in? I thought it was going to be the fourth.
I thought it was the next episode, but I was just looking this up on my computer, and it's actually the fifth episode that he's going to be in.
You think they're going to want to highly promote that, so you want to start.
Yeah, I got all excited, and then I was like, oh, I didn't see him in the promo.
I always thought they said it was the fourth episode. I remember reading that he was going to be in the fourth episode.
Right. I was expecting him to show up at the end of this episode.
You know what's going to happen? It's so obvious. He's going to show up at the very end of the fourth episode.
Is going to be a comic tradition. First appearance is like 5 seconds, and then you get the character in the whole next issue.
He's going to be, that's what's going to be. I'll stake my podcasting license.
Career?
I was going to say career, but that's, I don't know. I'd rather come up with something fictional than something pathetic. So,
oh my goodness.
Right. So, well, we wouldn't have time to talk about any other shows anyway. Plus, I haven't watched any other shows this week other than The Walking Dead, which I talked about
either.
Anyway, so I haven't seen both the good or the bad. So, but that will be something we'll try to do from time to time, especially considering next week that Supergirl is going to make her debut. And I feel we're going to have to talk about that one. As I understand it, one of our little podcasters here is going to go off and cheat on us and do a totally different podcast centered on that show.
Vicky will represent us very well, I'm sure. So have a good time with that. Hopefully they're cool. Hopefully they're less obnoxious than we are, especially Kate.
So when we record next week, we'll be sure to actually reference it by title and everything, so people can be on the lookout for it. So kind of we support our own. It's possible, considering with Supergirl coming, and then next year, we know Legends of Tomorrow is on the docket. We may end up revamping the way we do these just to make it a bit more time efficient. I think it's something we're going to be thinking about. We may be reducing the way we do the recaps and making it more conversational, but we'll see. I anticipate that's likely, but we'll see. We haven't decided for sure yet.
Yeah, and then next week, I'm not sure when we're going to be getting together to record with some weird, I got a scheduling thing, and Vicky has to deal with issue with one of Chicago's sports mediocre games. Sports. Yeah.
This is actually the end of a marathon of like four podcasts in 10 days for us. The grueling schedule, at least for me.
Yeah,
I know you guys have.
How many podcasts think we've had?
You've had to do Fargo too, so it's been rougher on you.
A little bit. Well, maybe what we can do. Well, I guess maybe we shouldn't talk about it on the podcast, but I think we'll look at people's schedules, and it may be one of those things where we might have to break something up or something. You know, depending on if people are available on Tuesday or night or something like that, which probably someone won't be or something, but that might be a possibility. So we just maybe knock off the Flash and deal with Arrow at another time or something. All right. Well, if there is nothing else, I think I should get into wrapping up mode here. Does that make sense?
Go for it.
Yep. It makes sense to me.
Oh, wait. Dan, did you want to say something?
No, I agree.
Okay. I like it.
He likes it.
So, if you like us and you'd like to follow us on Twitter, our Twitter handle is at STVDpodcast. So that's STVD as in serious TV drama podcast. I will put up our links there. I will comment on things from time to time. Not quite as often as you'd think. I just don't think to do it as often as I should. But it's still a good account to follow. Better still, you can also find us on Facebook. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast. If you start typing Serious TV Drama, that should be enough to find us. Join the page. You can join conversations about any number of TV shows. And we'll talk about movies and other things. And even the occasional pizza conversation will happen there from time to time. Finally, you can track us down on iTunes. Again, just type in Serious TV Drama in the search box there. That should be enough to find us. It's great when people subscribe to us through iTunes. It just builds up our numbers. And if you like us enough, we would appreciate it oh so much if you could both rate and or review us there, especially if it's of the 5-star variety. The more we get there – I almost knocked over my Superman glass. wow. I think I dislocated my shoulder doing that. Ouch. Okay. Ow. So where was I? Oh, rating, reviewing. Yeah, it's to help raise our profile when people are searching for a podcast about, say, Arrow or Flash or Fargo or anything else. I have noticed that we have been starting to pop up in the top 100 for those things when you search for them. So that's kind of cool that we're finally making some headway. So,
yay!
In a weird way, I partially attribute it to me not being able to post a podcast, and I kept having to repost it, and I think people kept downloading it over and over, and that somehow raised our profile. So thank you, technology, for screwing us over and helping to raise our profile. And that's really all I have to say. Did we just lose somebody?
Well, I think we lost Vicky, so good night, Vicky.
Aww. Adios.
Bye, Vicky. Good night.
Good night, Vicky.
He's the monarch of motion, the sultan of speed, the wizard of whiz, yes, indeed. Go from here to China in a no-time flat. Beat the speed of light, and you can't beat that. The Flash,
the Flash, the Flash.
Meet the mighty Flash,
the Flash, the Flash.
In a fight he'll smash and crash, mash a whole gang of crooks or schnooks. Hey, he'll just clobber any kind of bad guy. Thief or robber, the world's fastest human. Yeah, man, the Flash,
the unbeatable Flash. The undefeatable Flash!
No one knows Barry Allen is his real name. Works with the police, justice is his aim. Wears a ring with the Flash's uniform in it. When danger threatens, he'll switch in a minute. The Flash,
the Flash,
meet the mighty Flash.